The Cycling Podcast, in association with RAFA.
Welcome everybody to the RAFA Cycle Club in Soho. My name is Richard Moore from the Cycling Podcast. It's a great honour and privilege to welcome to the RAFA Cycle Club, Sir Bradley Wiggins.
Thank you.
Brad, welcome. 5 Olympic gold medals, 8 Olympic medals. You're just off the plane, really, from Rio. Relief, is it what you feel?
Yeah, definitely relief. I made no secret of what I wanted to achieve out there, and obviously anything else would have been hugely disappointing. So to have it all done now, and it's been, 14 months since the hour record, and that was really the moment where I said after that, okay, it's all for the team pursuit now, and here we are, you know, and we've done it. And it's just, for me anyway, obviously everyone's different, the emotions, sort of Owen Dorr was just overjoyed and that, but for me it was definitely a sense of relief, and this feels like a burden and a weight off my shoulders now, that I don't have to wake up every morning and think, well, it's 4 months to the Olympics now, or this time next month it all will be over. And, you know, so I think that's a huge thing that you live with for the game. So, and then to have it as close as it was as well, it was kind of probably the worst thing to watch, but then a great final to be involved in, especially coming out on top. So,
well, you said at the World Championships in London that you would bet your house on...
One of them, smallest one, cheapest one.
Okay. maybe an apartment in Mallorca or something.
Yeah.
You said you were certainly very confident that you would turn it around. You were beaten by Australia in London. You were very confident that you would turn it around. Where did that confidence come from?
Well, I've always had confidence in the people that are around me, and especially when I look around that group and I see Ed Clancy, who I've said is one of the most talented racers I've ever raced with, athletes. He's a real special individual, great human being. Stephen Burke, same, just what they do when they're going well, they're the best in the world. And then someone like Owen Dahl, who's huge talent, the next big thing on the road for sure. And I just, when I look around those guys and then I start matching them man for man against the Australians, I knew that once we got through all the training and we'd done altitude camps and we got to where it really mattered, and then we got rid of the rubbish helmets, we wore the world's training skin suits, we got the best spikes once Savella made this bike, and I knew that we'd be around that 350 figure, which I thought was what it would take to win. And we were, and it all came off, and it came off for every discipline and every team, you know, the sprinters.
There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about, you know, how the improvement the British team have made, and equally how the other countries don't seem to have moved forward since the Worlds, in some cases gone backwards. I mean, and there's been talk about, you know, other teams being quite bitter about that and asking questions of that. Why is that? I mean, the Olympic Games is the pinnacle for every country. Why did Britain get it right and the other countries don't seem to get it right?
Well, because I think everything that we do, like even now, all the plans that will be put in place will be put in place for Tokyo. And so the whole process, they won't be thinking of the Worlds in Hong Kong when they do these plans. They won't think, right, Hong Kong in April next year, World Championships, what have we got to do between now and then? It will all be periodization about, well, we go to altitude here, we're going to do the Worlds here, World Cups. And it will all be about Tokyo. And that was the same for Rio when they finished London Olympics. And that's the same for most athletes as well. Jason Kenny, Laura Trott, and we obviously have had interim success, but not as a whole. The same with the team pursuit, really. It's always been about Rio. And the World Championships was great, and we were disappointed to lose at that time. But I kept perspective of the fact that it was easy to get tied up in the moment because it is the London Olympics, London World Championship, and we wanted to win there and this, that and the other. But I knew that I'd rather be sat here today as Olympic champion than world champion then. So
the final itself, then, Australia went out really, really fast. They were 0.6 or almost 0.7 of a second up at 1.2 and a half kilometres, I think. Were you aware that they were up?
I was aware it was close because, obviously, you're not riding round sort of looking across the track thinking. So I think we went out and we said we're going to go on 350 pace again, which was 14 second laps. So we went on that and we just focused on what I was doing, which is when I hit the front first time after 4.5 laps, I think it is, and then I concentrate on doing my first 2.5 lap turn, which takes us to halfway point. So we were just so focused on our race for that first 2K, and we said, well, I thought in my head that we'd win by about 3 seconds, so that the Aussies would be with us till 2.5, 3K, then they'd crack. and we'd start seeing them. And as I came into the home straight, normally if you got a good second on them, you can see them entering their straight. But we never saw them for a long time. So it was four laps to go. We still couldn't see them. Three laps to go. I was like, where are they? You know, come on. Two laps to go. And then I heard a roar from the crowd. And I assumed in my head, I thought, that's got to be us, that we've gone ahead. And it was, because there was more British flags in the crowd than Australian. So I knew it was... I knew they weren't cheering that the Aussies had gone ahead.
I think it was only in the last two laps that you sort of nudged ahead, and there was a moment that even the unflappable Chris Boardman got a little bit excited in the commentary box, because Owen Doyle swung up, you took over, but Burke had gone at that point, and when Doyle came back down, he didn't realise that Burke had gone, yeah. And he was a little bit off the back. Presumably you were unaware of that.
No, you're not aware of it, and I was just driving to the line and just hoping that we were all still there, and even into the last banking, I was thinking, I hope they're all still there, the guys, because there's visions of the worlds when Ed obviously dropped off, and you don't know at that point. And so I was just thought, go to the line, and then obviously as you fan up the track to come across the line together, I had the sort of the last 20 metres I was able to come off the handlebars and see that they were all there, and then look where the Aussies were. And as we were coming, and I was just, and then I knew we'd won when I saw that the Aussies were. So,
what? Have you watched the race back? Do you, you know, and was Owen, did Owen tell you about his, because he put in an amazing ride, yeah, just to keep in contact?
Yeah, he did. And I think that's the faith. I have so much faith in knowing that and reassurance knowing he's on the inside of me. For someone who's 21, 22 years of age, the amount of confidence he has being in a first Olympic final like that, and then to be able to deal with a moment like that under that much pressure, and he won it for us in what he did. And getting back on, it just shows like a mark of the bike rider, really. And yeah, as I said at the time, it's easy for the press and that say, you know, Wiggins leads Olympic team pursuit team, but I was adamant that I've never been in a team where every man has played his part to equal level, because there's always someone who's not as strong as the others and you're carrying a bit. I know, because I've been in team pursuits where they've carried me to an Olympic gold and you feel a bit of a fraud, but with this team, everyone played their part. There's not one person you could have took out, and we wouldn't have done it without
them. So no room for Mark Cavendish then?
Well, no, I mean, the thing with Mark is he would love to have ridden the semi-final, but he obviously had to do the Tour de France, and there just wasn't time for him to get up to speed at 350 pace. How many people in the world have done a 350? There's four now. Before the Olympics, there was no one. So we had to do a 350 in the semi just to make the final. Now, if we'd just tried to accommodate him just so you could have a medal, we might not have made the final. And that was the predicament we were in Newport. And there's only so many efforts you can do at 350 pace to see if someone's able to do it. So once the first two fell apart, it's like, we can't just get up and do a third one now and still do that pace. We just ran out of time, simply. We all thought he was capable of doing it physically, but we just didn't have enough time. And obviously that was late in the day when he really wanted to do the team pursuit. So we'd been working at this for 18 months to try and go that fast. So he was disappointed, naturally. And obviously I think that came across in some of the things he said and what have you. And so, yeah, there you go.
How do you think you'd be feeling?
But that's not me freezing him out of it, by the way. That's me going, hang on a minute. If I take our relationship aside, as much as I'd love Mark in there with me, win Olympic gold, I have to be brutally honest about this. It's about winning. We've worked our asses off for this. And what, are we just going to accommodate someone? And that wasn't just me. So it was Ed Clancy. He's a huge leader in that team and a huge, but obviously it makes more of a story if Brad's frozen him out, you know. And so yeah, that was where all that came from.
How do you think you'd be feeling? You probably wouldn't be sitting here doing this event if you'd won a silver medal. But
No way.
But how would you feel if you'd come back with a silver medal?
I'd have been gutted, absolutely distraught. But I have to stop thinking about this, because I get nervous when I think about this. It scares me. And you know, what if? And we were talking about on the night. There was a point about three laps to go. I hit Owen's wheel in front of me. And had a bit of a wobble, and Owen missed the back, and there's all these things that could have happened that could have made us finish second. If my brother was a bird, he'd be my sister. So it's all this, you know, we could sit here talking about what ifs, and I don't like to think about what if we'd finished second, because we did win it. And I have to keep reminding myself, we did win that, and we are here now, and it was our hard work and everything that paid off, that, you know.
So retirement beckons. You've got Tour of Britain, I think you're riding. Gent 6 will be your final race. Yeah. You at that 100%, or do you think you might carry on in
no,
some...
No, I mean, I could carry on. I physically haven't been as good as I am now for a team. So even in earlier years, you know, I was the longest I ever did was a lap and a half on the front at 3:57 pace. So to be able to do two and a half lap turns at 3:50 pace and the gears we were riding now. When we rode in Sydney, for anyone who understands gearing, we rode 98-inch gear. I rode 117 in the final in Rio there. And that, so the training that, I'm glad I gave up the road because the demands, I've always said the demands of the event now are such, it's like a sprint event, so you have to train like this. We're pretty much in the gym all the time, flying laps off the fence, all this sort of stuff. So it's really, I've seen the improvement in myself. But I think that at some point you've got to stop. I'm 37 in April. I've had a great innings and I'm happy, content with what I've done. It's not about beating other people. And I'm just happy to be up in that company with those guys and go out on top. And it's a great way to finish and go and do other things now. You know, I'm looking forward to the next phase and I'm looking forward to trying to lead some semblance of a normal life without all the pressures of having this Olympics constantly on your back and the selfishness it brings as well, you know, like not being able to do the simplest of things because you've got the Olympics coming up. And
but retirement is tough for athletes. Does it scare you at all?
No, I mean, I've had a long time to think about it because I've known it was coming. So I've been thinking about it for 18 months and I know, so I've prepared myself for it. But one thing I'm not going to stop doing is riding my bike because I love riding my bike and I'm a huge fan of the sport and I'll continue to go out on my bike and so I'm not going to stop and get fat and unfit and, you know. So I want to keep doing that. The only thing I won't be doing anymore is being in Olympic finals and this, that and the other. So
I know a big long-term, well, a big sort of future project for you will be the team, which I think has been going now about 18 months, really, coming for 2 years. Tell us how that's gone so far. I mean, three of the finalists in Rio were from the team, including yourself, of course.
And but the team sprinter, Phil Hines.
Of course, yeah, forgot about that, yeah. Just tell us, you know, how that's been so far and what the immediate future holds.
Well, that's evolved all the time. I mean, that set up, that came out of not getting selected for the Tour de France in 2014. I was like, right, phew, Dave, I'm gonna go and set up a team now to facilitate the team pursuit. We'll just have the team pursuiters in it and we can all train and race together And then so that's where that started. And then as it's gone on, we've got Owen Dahl on board and then a couple of young guys and then guys from the academy system at GB now wanting to leave that behind and come to our team. And then suddenly it's evolved into Owen's a success story off to Team Sky. Without knowing it, it's crept up on us. And we go, well, there's our answer. There's the future of the team is developing under 23 riders and moving them on. So we don't want to go out and most teams that start say, yeah, we want to be at the Tour de France in 5 years. We want to win the Tour de France, which and most of them fall by the wayside. And it's just all, it's like almost like a rite of passage to say these things when you start in a new team. Well, we don't want to be at the Tour de France. I'm sick to death of the Tour de France. So why don't we feed riders on, educate them, make sure they come out of a system where there's no doubt about doping and problems in the past and they're educated, they have a good time doing it without all the pressures of having to win races for a huge commercial company and then feed them on to a team. And the inspiration for that was Axel Merckx's team in America. You know, having a British-based team where riders can stay in Britain, we go across to the continent and race and they don't have to go to America or anything like that. So that's where that came from, and now it's given us a real drive, and obviously Simon at RAFA was hugely behind that, Pinarello and the like. So,
and what would your role be in that sort of next year? Will you be the guy in the team?
Well, I don't want to be like Dave B, that's for sure. But I do want to just by being myself really, and all my own me as a person. I think that rubs off into the team really. So, you know, when you look at the design of the kit, that was born out of the old British jersey, you know, from the 80s, 70s and 80s with the red sleeves and not having, like I say, a huge sponsor. So obviously the team carries my name. And I was always fighting when I was at Team Sky, fighting against the system or what I thought was a system about key messaging and not being able to be yourself and having to be a number and not being able to have any sort of personality or... I just thought it was a constant battle, you know, and trying to be yourself. And that's what I want this team to be. I want people to be able to be themselves, have their own personality, express themselves, how they feel, as long as they're nice, they don't swear, and you know that they're carrying my name and that they're representing what I'm about and my name. But I encourage them to be themselves and let people see, because that's what draws people to is showing a bit of yourself, and that just not the same old cliches and key messaging and this, that, and the other. We ain't got any key messaging. It's just. So that's what it's about for me.
Well, it's very much a team in your image. There's a nice picture circulating at the moment of you with a 12-year-old Laura Trott after the 2004 Olympic Games. This idea of role models is obviously very important to you. You've inspired a lot of people. I'm sure a lot of people here watched the Road to Rio documentary as well. And that was an excellent film. I just wonder if the 12... You seemed, watching that film, that you went to cycling because it was a very alternative thing to do. Now it's not. It's kind of mainstream. I wonder if the 13-year-old Bradley Wiggins, and it's mainstream thanks to the likes of you, but I wonder if the 13-year-old Bradley Wiggins nowadays would go to cycling.
Well, I think they probably would. I mean, it's you know, it's a national sport now, and it's obviously become with the, you know, that we're sat here in central London in a cycling themed shop cafe, and this wasn't around 25 years ago. In the early 90s, when I was cycling around London, I was the only one cycling around Regent's Park as a kid in my Z-top. And to get to Regent's Park, I used to ride out on my estate in a tracksuit because I didn't want to be seen in Lycra because I was frightened of the consequences of that. And that was what it was like, you know. Britain was quite a violent time in the late 80s anyway. You know, it was under Thatcherism and all that. And, you know, it was... kids, cycling wasn't on TV then like it is now. I mean, obviously it was on Channel 4 and the Tour and that, but it was, you know, Bernardinos of this world riding around in woolly shorts and things. So it wasn't like it is today, space age, and the likes of Kenny winning on the track and Hoy and that. And it's socially acceptable now to be seen in cycling kit and a helmet. And that's what's changed about it, really. And I did a media day for Prudential at the Velodrome this year in London in May, and there was 15 inner city kids. They come from Hackney, and they're all from bad eggs, bad past, this, that, and the other. But Prudential had helped them by giving them bikes and kit, and this charity had helped. And they all wanted photos and selfies with me, and they all had Lycra on. They were doing this 46 miler last week. That's what they were aiming to do. And I thought that was a real... Because those are the sort of kids that would have been chasing after me. And I just thought how times have changed. And it's fantastic to see it, really. And just cycling in general, you know, the Owen Dalls of this world now going into a Team Sky, the opportunity that they're going to have in terms of coaching and everything going forward, even compared to when I turned pro, to go and live in a basement flat in France. And it's just such a good time to be getting into it.
Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world.
Well, let's call up Alton here. He's just back from the Transcontinental Race, where he finished sixth. That's why, yeah. That's why he's he ate all the flapjacks up there. He's still refueling. I'll just explain. I mean, Alton designed the Wiggins jersey, and that was a very collaborative process with Brad. I wondered if the two of you could sort of talk through that. When I had a look at your deck, I saw sort of a lot of pictures, old pictures of Robert Miller, Tom Simpson, even ANC yeah. Halford's in there.
It was quite an easy job, actually, because I think the goals of the team were so explicit. It's rare, like lots of new teams come along, but very rare to have such an explicit goal of Rio and gold. So we wanted to create something that reflected Brad and the team's ambition. And we had three elements to work with, which was Brad, Rio, and this GB focus. So with that, we had the colour scheme obviously reflects the GB, the gold for Rio, and the roundel for Brad, which was the centrepiece of the whole thing. So, yeah, as design jobs go, it was very easy one to do. And we looked at early imagery from Paul Curran and those boys back in the track days to Percy Stallard as these kind of figureheads for the sport way back. And that was the foundation for where we got to.
You just did a bit. They did a short presentation to me, and straight away from the start, I loved it. There was a few ideas bouncing around before that, but they were really commercial. Really, you know, much like most teams, like One Pro Cycling, very commercial for, and that's sort of becoming the trend now, following on from Team Skies, and so I think I wanted it to be different, and I wanted it to be different and stand out from a lot of the other teams, really. And I think that was sort of the remit for the kit, and but also in being involved with Rafa doing the kit, that there was a real nod to the heritage of cycling and everything else, and what's gone on before, and what the ultimate goal was about it, and then working back from that, really, and then sort of going back to the early set, you know, trendsetters, if it were, and you know, the sort of team pursuits from the 70s and 80s, and so
you weren't tempted to copy the Zed top then?
No, I mean, it's the whole, you know, when you, the first few things was that sort of British feel, really. It was a British team, so it had, that was a kind of overriding theme with it, and there was obviously plays on the Union Jack flag and things like that, but they'd all been sort of done before, really. And what's evolved is kind of, it was done in a very short period of time as well. I didn't have long to actually get it out. And the first few races we did, we just rode in black kit because it wasn't ready. So it was, it all happened from doing the deal with Rafa, didn't it? So pretty much overnight, so.
Yeah, I think we'll keep the sad thing for something else. But and I think picking up on the modness of the whole thing as well, like it needed to be quite sharp and attention to detail. Everything placed nicely, so we wanted to give a nod to that. When did you start using the roundel itself?
I've always had one on my bike since Garmin days, really. Okay. And my helmet, and it was a friend of mine just stuck one on my helmet one day when I went to the Vuelta or something.
Right.
And then it just became synonymous with me, and I kind of, once I became British champion on the road, I thought, well, I'll just put a few more on, and then I obviously did the Tour de France with one on, and I did the Olympics with one on and got in trouble from the IOC.
It
became almost associated symbol with myself without anything else other writing towards it, really. And then so obviously then the colour changed, and now it's become so identifiable with the team and the colour scheme as well. Even without the Wiggins, if you took that away, it's still you know, there's just the roundel alone in the team livery is...
It wouldn't work as well with silver, wouldn't it? No?
And we've done that in 18 months. Team Sky have been trying to do that for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Team Wiggins, but will you bring in more sponsors? Will it always be known as Team Wiggins?
That's the idea, that it keeps its identity and it doesn't become British Cast, British Telecom, whatever, you know. It's the important that it keeps that, because that encapsulates everything the team is around. Starbucks coffee cycling team wouldn't sound the same, would it? You know, so it's it has to keep that. And obviously people, we're very specific and very choosy about partners that come on board, and that they have to really tie in with what we're doing and represent us as well, and represent the team and have similar ethos in their own company, which is why Yes came on board this year, an electrical company based in Leeds. They've only been around the same time as the team have been around. And so straight away, as soon as we went and met them, they kind of shared the same goals for their own company as we did, which is why they came on board.
I read this week that you also plans to launch a women's team as well.
Yeah, well, that's the next natural thing. Now I've got more time, and obviously with the success again at Olympics, this happens every 4 years that women's cycling comes to the fore with the success you have. It happened 4 years ago, and all the talk of a women's Team Sky or a women's Tour de France, and then it dwindled down and dies out within 12 months as people tend to forget about it again. But, you know, with the success of Laura this week, Becky James, the girls on the road, I think, again, it's time for someone to actually put the money where their mouth is. And I mean, I did that after the last Olympics by sponsoring Wiggle Honda. But this time, I think, you know, I've got another 12 months to work out and put together the potential to have a women's team by 2018, whether that's under 23 or pro. I still like to keep it grassroots and give a pathway to women going through to the bigger teams, the Wiggle Hondas of this world.
Your event was fairly early on in the track program, but we've seen the last few days just total domination, really similar to Beijing and London from the British track team. Has that taken you by surprise?
Not really. Not seeing how everyone works towards these goals. And obviously, we see them day in, day out in the velodrome, working on the different things and with the ultimate goal in mind of Rio and working back from that. And when you see the likes of Jason Kenny, Laura Trott, I mean, they're the best in the world at what they do. The other girls, the sprint girls that have been working towards that, the team pursuit, the women's team pursuit, you know, it's no surprise really seeing, and I've seen it now at three or four different games, so it's the biggest thing in the world. It's once every 4 years, that's why it happens once every 4 years. You only get one chance to get it right. And we've got a tried and tested strategy and a lot of familiar things, like we always go back to the Celtic Manor in Newport to do our holding camp. So that's a familiar setting for us all. Much like a boxer training for, you know, his title fights in defence, they always go back to the same gym. And you'll find that a lot with successful teams, that there's a lot of familiarities and them keeping structure and doing the same things that worked in the past.
Just finally, as well as the team, you mentioned earlier you fancy replacing Chris Hoy as the sort of BBC pundit at the next Olympic Games.
Not replacing him. That's
in addition.
I'll replace Claire Boarding. So I'll be the one asking it. Chris can remain the expert, and I'll be the Johnny Vaughan-esque presenter of the programme.
Brilliant. On that, something to look forward to. On that note, thank you very much, Bradley Wiggins.